ticklish business any way you look at it. Come on, we'll stick together.
It's Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. This week's episode, I'm joined by special guest, The Vern, as we belatedly celebrate Cary Grant's birthday by listing our three favorite Grant films.
Thanks.
Ain't having much luck, are you?
No, but I'd have a great deal more if Doheny and the others would cooperate.
Ain't none of them worth saving. If you hang around them long enough, you'll get that way yourself.
Well, thanks for the kind interest.
You know, I always did like a man in a uniform. And that one fits you grand. Why don't you come up sometime and see me? I'm home every evening.
Yeah, but I'm busy every evening.
Busy? So what are you trying to do, insult me?
Before he was Cary Grant, he was Archibald Alexander Leach, born on January 18, 1904, in the British town of Horfield. His childhood was an unhappy one. His older brother John died of tuberculosis in 1900, his father was an alcoholic, and his mother was clinically depressed. It was his mother Elsie who taught Cary Grant to sing and dance at the age of four. Movies were similarly ingrained into his brain at a young age, and Grant had fond memories of watching films from the likes of Charlie Chaplin and Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle. When Grant was 10, his father sent Elsie to a mental institution, declaring to his son that his mother had eventually died. It wasn't until he was 31 that Cary Grant learned his mother was alive all this time, and during the making of Gunga Din, the two were reunited. Grant cultivated a love of the theater, and after being expelled from school, he joined a vaudeville troupe touring the county. He eventually made it stateside, and toured on the vaudeville circuit for several years before his transition to film. It was impresario William B. Friedlander who gave Grant the opportunity that would change his life, putting him as the romantic lead opposite Faye Ray in a musical called Nikki. After positive reviews for his work, Paramount gave him a screen test and put him in the 1932 film Singapore Sue. The films he was making here don't have the greatest caliber in terms of title and storyline. Paramount was skeptical about offering him a contract and demanded that he change his name from Archie Leach in order to seal the deal. So, Archibald Leach became Cary Grant, and Grant enjoyed finding ways of dropping his original birth name into his movies.
Well, that isn't going to help you this time. You're through.
Listen, the last man who said that to me was Archie Leach just a week before he cut his throat.
Is that so?
Grant started out playing playboys and second fiddles, opposite the likes of Thelma Todd in This Is the Night, Marlena Dietrich in Blonde Venus, and most famously, Mae West in the pre-co comedies She Done Him Wrong and I'm No Angel. Here, he usually just played the guy. Despite the caliber of his co-stars, which later included Jean Harlow, Frederick March, and regular leading lady Katharine Hepburn, he was ultimately deemed unbankable in the early 30s. His first major success came in 1937, when he was loaned to the Hal Roach Studio for Topper. After that, Grant found his niche playing comedic leads, like in The Awful Truth, Bringing Up Baby, and Holiday, the first film that he made with Hepburn. Though the movies weren't always commercially successful, he was in demand and transitioned to serious dramas like Gunga Din and Only Angels Have Wings. In 1941, he starred in Penny's Serenade, nabbing him his first Oscar nomination. By 1946, Grant's films weren't being taken to by audiences or critics, which is strange considering I find some of his best work to be in the post-World War II era. In these films, Grant's looks are incidental, though the audience knows he's gorgeous in all of his movies, starting in the 30s up until 46. The character never has any airs or pretensions about them. By the 1950s, Grant believed he was washed up and left Hollywood, returning in 1955 with Grace Kelly's To Catch a Thief. And from that point, he had hit after hit, with An Affair to Remember and re-teaming with Alfred Hitchcock again for North by Northwest. By 1966, with the birth of his daughter Jennifer, Grant became disillusioned by how cinema was transitioning from the 50s into the 60s and ultimately the 70s. He was ready to retire and left movie screens at the age of 62.
Excuse me, what did you say?
I say I'm glad to know you.
How can you be glad to know me? I know how I'd feel if I was sitting with a girl and her husband walked in.
I'll bet you do.
You know, I don't think you ought to go around telling people you're not married. He looks like a nice sort of fella. How do you think he feels?
Why don't you go and play with the dog?
Why don't you go on with whatever you were doing? I'm gonna... Don't mind me.
Considered one of Hollywood's shrewdest businessmen, he worked for Fabergé and was the director of MGM after he retired. He was cited as one of the wealthiest men in Hollywood when all was said and done. You might be wondering about where Grant's personal life fell into all this. Like many of the greats, his personal life is filled with speculation and innuendo. Costumer Ori Kelly infamously declared he had a long-term relationship with Cary Grant back before he was famous, when he was still considered Archie Leach. But this didn't come out until after both people had already died. Grant himself lived with actor Randolph Scott for 12 years, though neither ever really defined their relationship, and many assumed that it was a romantic relationship. Grant married 5 times, to Virginia Shirell, Woolworth heiress Barbara Hutton, co-star Betsy Drake, actress Diane Cannon, who is the mother of his child Jennifer, and finally Barbara Harris. Grant died of a stroke in 1986 at the age of 82, boasting a career that included 76 films but only 2 Oscar nominations for the aforementioned Penny Serenade and 1944's None But the Lonely Heart. He was given a Lifetime Achievement Oscar in 1970. The New York Times reported about his death by saying, quote, "Cary Grant was not supposed to die. Cary Grant was supposed to stick around as our perpetual touchstone of charm and elegance and youth." When we come back, guest host Laverne and I list our top 3 favorite Cary Grant movies.
Red, you could be the finest woman on this earth. I'm contemptuous of something inside of you you either can't help or make no attempt to. Your so-called strength, your prejudice against weakness, your blank intolerance.
Is that all?
That's the gist of it. Because you'll never be a first-class human being or a first-class woman until you've learned to have some regard for human frailty. It's a pity your own foot can't slip a little sometime. But your sense of inner divinity wouldn't allow that. This goddess must and shall remain intact. There are more of you than people realize. A special class of the American female. The married maidens.
So help me, Dexter. If you say another word,
I'm through, Red. For the moment, I've had my say.
Today, I'm talking with the Vern of Film Pasture and Screen Tracks podcast. Vern, how are you today?
Hello, Kristen. Good to see you. Good to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you talking about Cary Grant today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast and all of that?
I'm the Vern, host of the Film Pasture and Screen Tracks podcast. The Film Pasture is supposedly the sister podcast to the Lambcast, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com. The Film Pasture is actually hosted by me and Kristen Lopez as well, and we like to interview other podcasters and bloggers from the LAMB site, the Large Association of Movie Blogs, and get into topics about film blogging. We'll do shows about podcasting, and we'll do a show about how to set up a website. And I've recently had interviews with filmmakers talking about the art of distribution, and we had a talk with like women in horror filmmakers. We don't stick to the strict schedule that the LAMB site has, and we can go into various topics. And then Screen Tracks, which you can find at screentracks.net, that's Screen Tracks with the Nets. That's a show hosted by me and my friend Jordan Jeske. We talk about a movie, and then we talk about the soundtrack that went with that movie. And so far, episodes have been on That Thing You Do and A Clockwork Orange, and we're about getting ready to do one on 8 Days and Confused, and also on Those Type of Horrors.
Well, I've been fortunate to the Film Pasture co-host, and it's been fun. But today, of course, we're going into a topic that I don't think we would probably do on Film Pasture, talking about Cary Grant. What has been your experience with Cary Grant's film work? Because I was very surprised when you volunteered to do this show. What is it about him as an actor in his films that's enticing?
I like the fact that he can just do it all. He can be the hero. He can also be the Swindler type of guy. He can be the neurotic person there. He can be the romantic lead, any type of character role. He's not necessarily typecast into a role. We'll get more into, you know, my Cary Grant experiences when we get into our top 3, because the first Cary Grant movie I ever saw is part of that list right there, and I'll get more into that. I just like the fact that the dude has played a whole bunch of different types of characters, and he never seems to be pigeonholed. Some actors, they seem to be pigeonholed into just one role, and Cary Grant, what I've seen, has done a multitude of different roles.
You're definitely on to something. He was a chameleon, even though I would always say that Cary Grant, no matter what he's playing, always plays very smooth and charming. But even when he's playing a neurotic type A personality, there's something magnetic about him. And you're definitely right. He's done comedy. He's done suspense. He's done serious drama. I mean, I think the fun of coming up with our list was realizing that you can have at least five different people who would probably give you five different movies as number one, because he had so many credits and so many different genres. I think the only thing he didn't do was a musical, and he did do music-based films, something like Night and Day, where he was playing a very heterosexual Cole Porter, but he never did actual singing and dancing. So unless somebody would tell me there's an obscure Cary Grant movie where he did sing and dance, but I don't believe there is.
And that seems really weird too, because he would be the perfect lead for something like that.
I don't think he could sing.
It doesn't matter. They can always dub someone else's voice in before. They can do that.
Yeah, Marnie Nixon to dub his voice.
Got Hugh Grant to sing, okay? Cary Grant would be
they
just
fine. They can get Pierce Brosnan to sing. Then we could have definitely gotten Cary Grant to sing. Let's start our top three discussion. Vern, what is your number three?
My number three has to be His Girl Friday. I would go into a little precursor about this. Now, growing up, I never watched any classic movies at all. Not at all. And then I picked up the script for Pulp Fiction. And inside the script for Pulp Fiction, it says, Pumpkin and Honey Bunny are sitting in a diner talking a la His Girl Friday.
From the Columbia Studios in Hollywood comes an exciting new film triumph. A companion hit to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, His Girl Friday. Co-starring a thrilling new pair of screen lovers, Devil May Care, Cary Grant, and ravishing Rosalind Russell. Let's listen in to one of their tender, idyllic love scenes.
I am fond of you, you know.
And a girl.
I often wish you weren't such a stinker.
And so I saw the words, His Girl Friday. I'm like, well, I've never heard of this before. So I went and rented it because I'm a big Pulp Fiction fan, and I want to know about that same type of dialogue. I watched it, and I enjoyed every moment of it. I thought it was really great. For those of you that have never seen this before, stars Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell. Rosalind Russell has been this big-time reporter, and she's come back into town to tell Cary Grant that she's getting now married to Ralph Bellamy. There's a big news story that breaks, and Cary Grant keeps finding ways to have her stay around a little bit longer. There's a great sequence where he sees an older guy and thinks that he's the husband, and totally confuses Ralph Bellamy. Ralph Bellamy's trying to make an entrance there, and he's, hold on, guy, I'm trying to talk to her new husband here. And it's just stuff like that. I love Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell's dialogue together. I think they're just great. The fast-paced dialogue is super fun. I know this was based off of another movie, The Front Page, where it was like two guys in that one, and they replaced it with a guy and a girl in this movie. I've never seen The Front Page. I'm sure it's good.
They remade The Front Page again in the 60s with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. So that story's been told countless ways. I've watched it several times, and it's never been a movie I can get into, and I'm in the minority on that one.
Goes from comedy and then it goes into the story about criminal in jail right there. It's been a while since I've seen the movie too, but I just really enjoy how it switches from being a lighthearted comedy to being almost a dramatic piece but still have comedy in there. A lot of times, especially with newer movies, when it does that switch from comedy to drama, it's very obvious and it becomes somewhat painful because you know it's there. And here, it just kind of flows together very well. It's highly enjoyable. It just recently got released on Criterion Edition, which I'm hoping to pick up this weekend.
It's never been one I've gravitated towards, and I've watched it several times, and I don't know what it is, but he is great in that. My number three could not be any further from His Girl Friday. I will say Vern took a lot of the good ones that most people would take. I tended to gravitate towards the B-sides of Cary Grant's career, and I tend to like Cary Grant in the 40s. 40s Cary Grant is kind of my thing. So my number three is from 1947, post-World War II. It is The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer.
No, it isn't really Cary's second childhood. Just one of the hilarious jams he gets into in The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer. You see, he's dream bait for Shirley. He really sends her. But he's wolf bait for Judge Myrna, and she really sends him. On top of that, he's high man on the totem pole, low man in the three-legged race, and a knight in a cast-iron zoot suit. All because he's getting the funniest romantic rib since Adam met Eve.
It's directed by Irving Reese from original story by Sidney Sheldon, who was a pulp writer. And could only be made in the 40s, only in the classic era. Cary Grant plays a writer named Dick Nugent. He is talking to a group of high schoolers one day, and there is a young girl in the audience named Susan, played by Shirley Temple. This is one of the films she made after her child career had come and gone. And she literally sees him as a knight in shining armor and falls in love with him to the point that she breaks into his house and waits for him. Through a series of machinations, ends up in a courtroom. It happens to be in front of Judge Margaret Turner, played by Myrna Loy, who, of course she is the older sister slash guardian of Susan. She's already met Dick before, so she doesn't like him. She thinks that he's a cad. Susan's infatuation with him is not helping because it's bordering on obsession. So Margaret gets this great advice that if Susan is allowed to date Dick, then she'll realize that she doesn't love him because she'll realize that they have nothing in common. So he is essentially blackmailed and told that if he dates her sister, that all the charges against him will go away. Effectively, this is a movie where a grown man dates a 16-year-old girl in order to avoid going to prison.
Wow.
It's a movie that I watched, and the first time I saw it, I said, this is right up my alley. But it's such a great late take on the screwball, because as he's dating, quote-unquote, Susan, and it's a very chaste type of dating, he realizes that him and Margaret have this attraction to each other, and it was great seeing Myrna Loy play a powerful woman. I mean, she's playing a judge in a court of law in the 40s, and I think that's amazing. Shirley Temple shows that she was limited as she got older. She's not the best actress as a teenage girl, but she plays the role like a teenage girl. Cary Grant is just great because he is going all out for this one. He's wearing a fedora and trying to talk like the kids because he's thinking, well, at this point, I have nothing to lose. Might as well play along. Susan has a boy that is in love with her, and he doesn't like Cary Grant because he's not really sure what's going on. And people, of course, think he's a dirty old man. And it's got a great supporting cast that includes Harry Davenport, who always played either judges or grandpas. He plays Myrna Loy and Shirley Temple's father or grandfather or something like that. And you have Rudy Valley. It's just a fun, fun movie with a plot that is just so insane. It could only have been made in this time period.
That sounds like a really, really good movie right there. Something I definitely want to check out. The only thing I know about Myrna Loy from is, wasn't she in that movie, The Thin Man?
Yeah, she's Nora Charles, yes.
That's why that name sounds familiar. I've seen The Thin Man.
She worked with Cary Grant after this for Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, which is a movie that almost made my list. When we talk about honorable mentions, I might throw it in there. But they had also teamed together. They work very, very well. And she's great. We're the top three herself.
If we did a top three of hers, mine would just be only on The Third Man, because I've only seen just those movies so far. I also noticed, too, that the writer did episodes of I Dream of Jeannie, Sidney Sheldon.
Yes, Sidney Sheldon was a great jack of all trades. He wrote crime novels. He wrote television. He was all over. What's your number two, Vern?
All right, well, my number two, Kristen, is one that has been popular. I know a lot of people have been talking about on their list before. But my number two is, of course, Bringing a Baby.
Yes, but just a little bit.
It is a ridiculous story.
I have
Where
a
is the leopard?
In there.
I don't believe you.
But you must believe me.
I've been
me,
a victim once more of your unbridled imagination.
Another screwball comedy from the great Howard Hawks. This one involves a paleontologist, Cary Grant. He meets up with this socialite, Katharine Hepburn. Katharine Hepburn becomes immediately in love with him and starts stalking him, following him around everywhere. She has a pet leopard that she has to take with her and gets Cary Grant involved with it, cross country to her father's estate. Basically, she tells him that her father has like this bone that he needs for his collection. She just tells him anything just so that he'll stay there. It may be just me, but Katharine Hepburn, was probably the first manic pixie dream girl, just because she's so out there and kind of crazy and nuts in a way, but she is also Dieran.
Katharine Hepburn is fantastic in that movie. I want to say this was after she had been labeled box office poison, or this was right before that, because they never really knew what to do with her. But in the 30s was the great screwball, and this is held up as the screwball film because it shows the wealthy as just daffy average people who, because they have all this money, they can't be held accountable to common things like courtesy. I love Bring It Baby. If you had not put it on here, it would have been on my list as well, because Cary Grant plays the straight man in this movie, and he is so great at playing deadpan comedy. There's a scene in the movie, and I know my mother, who is listening to this probably, will know what exactly the scene I'm talking about. It's when Katharine Hepburn calls him to tell him that she has the leopard. Her brother has left her a leopard. The letter says his name is Baby and he likes dogs. I don't know if that means that he's friendly with them or he eats them. But of course, Cary Grant's character doesn't really care. He doesn't want to hear from her, and she trips. And she proceeds to act like she is being attacked by the leopard, throwing herself around. And I just love the way Cary Grant, before he rushes out the door to go save her, he just says, "Hold on, Susan, be brave."
That whole entire sequence where he goes to the apartment and finds Baby there is just brilliant. I forgot the song they had the scene to her to calm her down with.
"I can't give you anything but love, Baby."
That whole thing right there. I like the sequence too, where she's talking to the cops. They stole her car, and she's at a stop right there, and she's talking to the cops. And I'm not going to do it any justice for trying to repeat what the dialogue is, and I hope that everyone just sees it, because it's a lot of fun.
There are so many great moments involving cars, ripped dresses, stolen purses. They eventually end up in jail through a series of things. This is also a movie where you get a great little jab at Cary Grant, where he references himself as Archie Leach, which was actually his real name. I think that it's such a great movie. I do think, because I'm throwing out criticisms of classic movies, I do think the second half runs a little long, because that first half is just so funny. It's a mile a minute hilarity. I think it has to peter out eventually. And this is also the movie where most people bring it up, the first use of the word gay to mean homosexual. And a lot of people debate whether Cary Grant dressed up in the frilly bathrobe, and I think it's Katharine Hepburn's mother, asks him why he's wearing it, and he jumps in the air and says, "Because I just went gay all of a sudden." A lot of people debate whether he means gay or gay isn't happy, and I always say it means he's talking about gay. Okay, like, you know, he did live with Randolph Scott for several years, and they were grown men, and say what you will, but I always assumed. I think the Bringing a Baby is a classic in so many ways, and a great little piece of, there's a lot of Hollywood in-jokes in there, evidenced by the fact of stuff I brought up, so.
Well, and this is a movie, too, that was initially panned. A lot of people didn't like the movie when it first came out.
I'm not really sure. If somebody listening has an answer to that, please feel free to let us know. Well, my number two is probably one of the more famous Cary Grant movies directed by Alfred Hitchcock, and it's not North by Northwest, because I still have to see that. It is 1946's Notorious.
Sit up. I've got to get you out of here.
I thought you had gone.
No, I had to see you once, speak my piece. I was getting out because I love you. I couldn't bear seeing you and him together.
Oh, you love me. Why didn't you tell me before?
I know. But I couldn't see straight or think straight. I was a fat-headed guy full of pain. It tore me up not having you.
I love Notorious so much. Script by the great Ben Hecht, who did a lot of amazing films. I want to say he also wrote the script to His Girl Friday, but I could be wrong. Or he did the script for The Front Page, something like that. Notorious is a very complex story that, when you boil down to it, is about a relationship. Ingrid Bergman plays Alicia Huberman. Her father is accused of being a Nazi, and she is essentially labeled one alongside him. And she gets an opportunity by a man named Devlin, played by Cary Grant, and I find it amazing that his name alludes to the devil. He offers her a chance to clear her name. She also has a reputation for being promiscuous. And he's giving her this opportunity to clean up her image by helping to spy on a man who has Nazi ties, a man named Alexander Sebastian, played by Claude Rains. Devlin essentially knows that Sebastian had a thing for Alicia. Claude Rains is at least 20 years older than Ingrid Bergman, so it's that type of relationship. But he tells her, use your feminine wiles, get in good with this guy, date him, find out what's going on. And that's the movie in a nutshell. And as things progress, there's poisoning, there's a great scene involving the passing of a key that happens. It's just an amazing, amazing movie. I think it's better than the other relationship drama that he made with Hitchcock, which is Suspicion, which would be somewhere in my top 10 Cary Grant films. I think the ending is a bit of a letdown, but this is a movie where you have all this Nazi scheming and treason to the US, and what it really boils down to is a couple that doesn't trust each other, because Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman have some phenomenal chemistry. I referenced it in a previous episode, but this is a scene where the production code only allowed for kisses to last 10 seconds. You could not kiss for longer. And the way Hitchcock got around that was having this extended scene where the two would start kissing and then stop, and then start kissing again, and then stop and pull away, and then start it again. So it goes on for about a minute, but they're not actually locking lips for more than 10 seconds. And it's a really sexy, sexy scene, because you're not denying that these two people are doing something. But as the movie progresses and as she starts doing what he wants, which is to date this man, I know that Hitchcock has written some horrible men who are just bastards. I always find Devlin to be the worst, because he treats her like crap and says, you love this guy and you're totally betraying me and how dare you, and lets his colleagues talk crap about her in front of her. But as soon as she leaves, he's like, hey, stop being mean to her. She's doing good things for her country. And you're sitting there thinking, why can't he tell her? Well, of course, that's the point. He can't.
You know, this chart reminds me of, Kristen, just from the plot element. And I'm not saying it's a complete copy of it, though, but it reminds me a little bit of Allied.
I could see that. I haven't seen that movie, but I could believe that it's similar, because it is a pastiche to those type of films.
I've tried to see all his chart movies, and this is one I have never seen before. I don't think I've really heard of this one before. It's not really talked about.
I consider it one of the top three favorites for me, but I don't a lot of others who would. But it's got, again, an amazing cast, not only Cary Grant, Ingrid Bergman, Claude Rains, Louis Calhern, Maroni Olson. There are just so many amazing talents in this movie, and to watch this again, and I've watched this several times, it's a convoluted film that when you wipe away all the Hitchcock stuff, he's really trying to purge his own demons about trust in a relationship and his own thoughts towards women, because Hitchcock, of course, always wrote about himself, really. But it's so fascinating, and Ingrid Bergman is beautiful. She's very similar to Joan Fontaine, who was in Suspicion in 44 with Cary Grant. But Cary Grant just is such an ass in this movie, and I love it so much. Notorious. It's a great, great movie that everybody should see.
This is what I definitely want to see, especially after talking about Bringing Up Baby, because Bringing Up Baby plays the straight man, kind of a doofus in a way, and to see him play a guy who seems very romantic at first, but is evil and a dick to her at the same time, is one of those roles that I would just try to be shocked to see.
It always makes me smile when I see, if anybody's seen The Net with Sandra Bullock, the guy in that movie, the character, is named Devlin. I always assume that that's a callback to Notorious. I don't know if it is, but I always assume it is. Vern, what is your number one?
My number one is also another Hitchcock movie. I'm going to be talking about the movie North by Northwest.
I'm an advertising man, not a red herring. I've got a job, a secretary, a mother, two ex-wives, and several bartenders dependent upon me. And I don't intend to disappoint them all by getting myself slightly killed.
Cary Grant becomes a secret agent against his will. Propelled at gunpoint onto the highest level of international intrigue. And framed for murder. Cary Grant, running for his life, searching for a man who doesn't exist, and a secret nobody knows, and finding a blonde who has all the answers.
This co-stars Eva Marie Saint, and also James Mason. Barton Landau is in there as well, written by Ernest Lehman. It plays the story of Roger Thornhill, who is a business executive of some sort. He goes to a restaurant with his mother, Jesse Royceland, and he gets mistaken as the secret spy. And so they kidnap him, or they bring him to this house, and they fill him with a lot of liquor, and they get him drunk, they put him in his car, hopefully he'll get drunk and drive off a cliff, and he doesn't. It's the whole mistaken man identity right there. It's really great. I think this was probably the first time you saw a Bond-esque adventure on the big screen. The whole Ron Man deal, enjoy the hell out of this movie because you don't know exactly where it's going to go. At first, it's just a guy being mistaken for someone else, and then he gets involved with this plot involving James Mason character, as well as mentioned before, Barton Landau. I don't want to describe the whole plot to the listeners out there because I want them to enjoy it, because for me, I had no idea what's going on. The only thing I knew about this movie was the big sequence on Mount Rushmore and also the crop duster sequence, but I knew nothing else about this movie other than that. And it was a complete and total shock and surprise to me. I've watched it before. I've watched it again. It's one of those movies I want to see on the big screen in complete VistaVision because it would be kind of cool. And I still think that if this movie never came out, like it was lost and then suddenly someone found this movie, I have a feeling that this would be a big hit because it is just a really great action-adventure movie. I think Eva Marie Saint is a great love interest. There's a lot of sexual innuendo going on in the movie within their dialogue and the scenery there in the movie. It's just really a lot of fun, and it just doesn't matter if it came out now or back in the 50s. It's still just a wonderful, fun adventure movie, and I kind of like stories where you don't know exactly where it's going. Even though I've seen this movie before, sometimes when I'm watching it, I forget the turns that it takes, and it does a lot of that. If you only know just the crop duster sequence and the Mount Rushmore, it's just kind of fun to see how Cary Grant goes from the downtown New York to those areas, and it makes complete sense there too. I definitely want to pick up the DVD and listen to the commentary with Ernest Lyman to find out exactly how he wrote that in, because it would just be really great. And Cary Grant is awesome in this. He plays the complete straight man who's confused, but he also becomes the hero. Guy that doesn't want to necessarily be the hero and is trying to avoid that stuff, and then he eventually becomes it. It's a nice progression of how he got to be in that situation. So that's why it's my number one. Still thrilling. It's got a great title sequence by Saul Bass, who did a lot of Alfred Hitchcock's title sequences, and it's just a lot of fun.
I have not seen this. Thankfully, TCM's Fathom Event series, they will be showing this on the big screen April 2nd and 5th, conveniently the week of the TCM Classic Film Festival. So I will be watching this and then hopefully going to the festival a couple days later. But I've never seen this movie, and I've heard amazing things about it. I just have not gotten to it.
I cannot wait to hear your reactions of seeing something like this on the big screen. To see something like this the first time on the big screen theater would just be really amazing.
Well, my number one is actually a Christmas classic for me. And I know people would say you don't have Mr. Blandings, you don't have An Affair to Remember, which is another movie I actually need to see that I've not seen yet, that is actually playing in my theater, I think, in a couple of weeks, so I will be seeing that. I had to go with another movie from 1947, which is The Bishop's Wife.
The world changes, but two things remain constant.
What?
Youth and beauty. Now, they're really one and the same thing.
Yes. The trouble is people grow old.
Not everybody. The only people who grow old were born old to begin with. You were born young. You'll remain that way.
Oh, I wish I could believe you.
You may.
The Bishop's Wife is directed by Henry Coster. Henry Coster did a lot of great, heartwarming movies. He was known for directing not only this, but he did The Robe. He did Harvey, The Singing Nun. He did Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation, which is probably one of my favorite Jimmy Stewart movies. He did a little bit of everything. I want to say that he did The Unfinished Dance, which I've talked about a couple of times on this podcast as my favorite Margaret O'Brien film with Sid Charisse, so he's made some great movies. I was fortunate to meet his son at TCM Film Festival 2 or 3 years ago. He was really nice, so it was great. The Bishop's Wife tells of a small town pastor, Henry, played by David Niven, who prays for the ability to build a church. He wants to rebuild a cathedral and deal with the fact that he has been estranged from his wife, Julia, played by Loretta Young. And God answers his prayers by sending him an angel named Dudley, played by Cary Grant, who tries to teach Henry about loving his family and being able to get what he wants out of life. And Henry just sees Dudley as an inconvenience, a supernatural, really weird inconvenience. You might recall Disney remade this in 96 as The Preacher's Wife with Denzel Washington. The only good thing, other than the fact that it's directed by Penny Marshall, is Denzel Washington, who really gets the Cary Grant spirit in that movie. But the original film is still the best. This is a great movie. It's got Monty Woolley, James Gleason, Elsa Lanchester's in there for a small scene. And it's a really heartwarming movie because not only is it stranger comes into town and uses their uniqueness to bring back a family that has had some bad times, but it also is a story of a omnipotent being learning about humanity and realizing what makes people human. Because as Dudley bonds with Julia and there's a little bit of a romance developing, he realizes that immortality and all of that doesn't really stand in for the creature comfort, so to speak, of having a wife who loves you and a family and that ephemerality of being mortal and knowing that you need to appreciate all of it now because one day you're not going to be here. It's fantastic watching Cary Grant play this character who is in wonder with everything around him. There's a beautiful ice skating sequence. There's a really sweet moment. He bonds with Henry and Julia's daughter. There's some great one-liners. He's going through the mail and Henry asks Dudley if he's expecting anything. And Dudley says, well, if I did, you'd certainly want to save the stamp because it would be coming from God. And it's such a sweet movie. It's a very heartwarming movie. I always say that movies from the 40s especially did faith-based films in a way that is the best, because even though this movie deals with God and angels, which would denote a certain type of religion, there's no religious preference. It's very inclusive, it's very comforting, it's very human. And I love it so much. Every time it's on, I have to watch it. I think it's one of the best Christmas classics out there, and it's probably Cary Grant's greatest performance, even though he's not meant to be the lead. It's supposed to be David Niven's film, but Cary Grant just dominates it with his charm and his wonder and his ability to inhabit every scene with his presence, even if he's not in it. So The Bishop's Wife is my favorite Cary Grant movie.
Does Cary Grant's character start doubt that he's an angel, be the fact that he's around this beautiful woman?
He does start to wonder whether he should maybe give it up, whether he should stay on Earth, but that's never really a big threat. I think it's a bigger threat in the remake because he's Denzel Washington, but, you know, he does question here and there throughout the movie.
Because the way you describe this, it reminds me of that movie Winds of Desire a little bit, more into a romantic comedy situation with this one, too, than that other movie. I've never even seen The Preacher's Wife, just because I was afraid it was going to be a little bit too religion pushed on you a little bit there. But the way you described about The Bishop's Wife, and they have, you know, things with angels and God, but it doesn't push religion on you, I will definitely want to seek this one out.
Vern, were there any honorable mentions, things that almost made your list?
There were. I'm kind of limited on what I've seen from Cary Grant. One I would recommend for sure is Charade, with him and Audrey Hepburn. I love that movie. A lot of fun. Even though Cary Grant was a little bit older than Audrey Hepburn, I think they still had really great chemistry with each other. Probably The Philadelphia Story, even though that's one that I wasn't a huge fan when I first saw that movie, but it's something that I've warmed up to a little bit more watching it again. I have to, like, get back to that one again, but I didn't really like the character that he plays in that movie all that much. Thought it was kind of bad the way that it was trying to screw over James Stewart's character. Something that I definitely have to watch again because I've only seen it once. But yeah, those are probably the two right there. Charade and The Philadelphia Story.
I love The Philadelphia Story. One of the only movies where the best scene is watching him shove Katharine Hepburn onto the ground by her face. It makes me laugh every time. I had enough for at least a top 10, obviously. The one that almost made number 3 is My Favorite Wife from 1940. Cary Grant and Irene Dunne. This is a movie that's been remade several times, but Cary Grant plays a husband who has declared his wife dead on the day that he's going to get remarried after 7 years. It's the same day that his presumed dead wife returns from the grave. She has been living on an island for 7 years, and it's such a great movie. It's so fun. It's got Gail Patrick, who always plays Queen, and it's got Randolph Scott in this movie. Again, if you could write a lot about the Cary Grant gay subtext, but there is a scene where he watches Randolph Scott jump off a diving board into a swimming pool. And throughout the day, there's this little Randolph Scott jumping and leaping that's running through his mind, and you're thinking, what's that about? Not really sure. It's a fun one. Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House is another one I mentioned with him and Myrna Loy. Topper, which is him and Constance Bennett, where they are a freewheeling couple that end up dying and come back as ghosts to haunt Roland Young. Blonde Venus, which is a movie with him and Marlena Dietrich, where he plays Cad, and Monkey Business from 1952. It's older Cary Grant, but it's a really funny movie with him and Ginger Rogers. He creates a potion, a youth serum, and it's watching him and Ginger Rogers throughout the entire movie go from adults to teenagers to children eventually. And it's really funny. It's got early performance by Marilyn Monroe, who plays his secretary. There are a lot of Cary Grant movies worth watching out there. So everybody should just spend a day watching all of them. Let me know your thoughts about Cary Grant or your own Cary Grant top 3 list. You can email your thoughts to me at ticklishbiz@gmail.com and I'll read them on the next episode. I'd like to thank you once again, Vern, for joining me today. Where can fans find and get in touch with you?
Oh, well, thank you, Kristen. Okay, you can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Video Vanguard, video and then Vanguard, V-A-N-G-A-U-R-D. Find a lot of the shows I do on Screen Trash by going to screentrash.net, screen and then T-R-A-S.net. Also, you can find me on the Vern's videovortex.wordpress.com. Also, check out The Film Pastor. That's also on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podback, things like that. Definitely check those out. Thank you again for having me on the show. You definitely gave me a lot more Cary Grant movies to check out. Definitely interested in checking out those ones that you recommend on your list.
That's going to close out this edition of Ticklish Business. I apologize for the lateness of this episode. Personal complications got in the way, but I promise to have a regularly scheduled episode up on time next week. You can listen to Ticklish Business a multitude of ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, via Stitcher Radio, or on iTunes. If you are listening via iTunes, please consider leaving a 5-star rating and review. As always, you can contact me directly at ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z, @gmail.com, or visit me at my official website where I discuss classic films regularly, journeysinclassicfilm.com. And the podcast is also on Twitter at ticklish_biz. And if you enjoy my work on the show or via my website, consider supporting me via Patreon. Patreon members can get special access to things like upcoming topics before everyone else, promotional shoutouts, choosing the content of the episodes, even guesting on an episode. I have a prize pack for every level. So please, if you are interested in supporting the podcast or shaping what we talk about, you can visit my Patreon page at patreon.com/ticklishbiz. Next time, I'm going to be joined by another guest as we honor Cary Grant's co-star, Grace Kelly, by discussing Alfred Hitchcock's Dial M for Murder. Till next time.